Hey, everyone, and welcome. I'm so glad to see all of you here for this very special interview with someone that I'm so excited for all of you to meet. His name is Michael Ellsberg, and he's the author of The Education of Millionaires, It's Not What You Think, and It's Not Too Late. It's coming out September 29th from Penguin Portfolio, and this is a book that you are absolutely going to want to get your hands on, because in this book, Michael has shared interviews with self-educated millionaires and billionaires with a B. And what he's sharing with you in this book, literally, I've paid at least tens of thousands of dollars to learn, and you don't have to pay anything close to that because we put it all in a regular book that you can buy from the bookstore. And that's why I'm so glad that he agreed to join me today before he shoots into the stratosphere, Tim Ferriss-like, and we can't get him on a call. I said, Michael, I want to get you before the book comes out, before you go do all those big interviews. So
Alexis,
thank you
for
joining
me today. Alexis, I don't care if I'm the next president of the U.S. I will always make time for a call with you.
Yay!
It is a huge honor, and it's just great. I mean, I've known you now for so long. This is the first call we've done together. It's really fun.
Yeah.
I'm excited to be here.
Well, I'm so excited to have you here, as I said, because the book is transformational. In fact, you had sent me the galley proofs. I don't even know if I let you know this, but you had sent me the galleys before the book actually was, like, available in book format. And I had it just sitting around my house, and a gal came over to visit from out of town. And the next thing I know, she's engrossed in the book. She's taking notes. She's got all these business ideas that she's ready to take off with. And that's really what's super exciting about it, is that you are giving people the power to take back control of their lives. And I'd like to start by asking you, what made you decide to write this book? Because I remember we spoke about this before. You were kind of in that process of deciding, what is my next book? You had written The Power of Eye Contact. And for those of you that haven't checked out that book, that's an awesome book as well. It's called The Power of Eye Contact, Your Secret for Success in Business, Love, and Life, which is absolutely true. And you were deciding, you know, what should be the next book. I know you have lots of books inside of you. Mm-hmm. How did you decide on this one?
So it was really a process of introspection, and I'm 34 now, and about 2 years ago, I was kind of taking stock of my life, not quite a midlife crisis, but maybe a kind of third life, not really crisis, but just like, okay, where have I come? Where am I going? And I realized I was at a point where I really liked my life a lot, where it was for the first time really since I was a kid. And my career was going exactly as I wanted to. I had just gotten into a serious relationship with Jenna, who's now my wife. I had taken care of a lot of health problems that I had in my 20s. I'd suffered in my 20s mostly with bipolar 2, which is a really severe form of mood swings. And I had taken care of that through better nutrition and eating. So everything was going great. And two thoughts occurred to me. One, the reason it was going great wasn't just random. It was because I had learned about these areas. I had learned about how to get my career and finances in order. I had learned how to have a great relationship. And believe me, it was learning. I was a mess in relationships, you know, throughout my 20s. So I learned those skills, and I learned how to have better health. It didn't just happen randomly. So that's part A. Part B is that all of that learning, which transformed my life and turned my life from a mess in my 20s to a really great life in my early 30s, happened outside of school. And it was non-academic learning, and it was totally self-taught and informal. So I realized that there's this huge swath of learning which is non-academic and informal, not taught in formal institutions, which we never really tell our kids about, and I was never really told about. My focus was always on getting the grades, getting the grades, getting the grades.
Yeah.
And that's the focus, really, that we put our kids in until 22, and then we come out and have no way to really make our way in the world. And I just felt there was a huge gap missing, and no one was talking about this distinction between academic smarts and street smarts. So in finishing answering your question, I decided to go out and interview some of the most street smart people in the world. The people I interviewed, they're all brilliant, but very few of them achieved anything in any kind of academic context. And so all their smarts are street smarts, like how to get shit done in the real world.
Yeah. And I remember when you were deciding who to interview as well, and you were putting out, beginning to identify who are these millionaires and billionaires who have achieved a great deal of financial and creative success in the world without having gone to college. How did you, first of all, narrow down and identify who you want to interview? And then second of all, how did you find them?
So that's a great question. Well, the first one was pretty simple. I just did a bunch of web research. You know, if you type out millionaire dropouts or like dropouts, you know, basically if you type in like millionaire dropouts, a lot of stuff of these lists will come on. So you can find, I kind of made a list of like my dream list. In terms of actually finding the people, this is actually related to some of the content of my book.
Yeah.
One of the street smart skills that I talk a lot about is connecting and networking. I mean, this is an enormously important skill. If you look at your ultimate results in life, your ability to be a good connector and networker is, in my view, like 50% of it. I mean, it's not 100%, but it's like 50%. And it's just incredibly important, and it's not even talked about, let alone taught in even professional school, even if you're going to go get a law degree. So I've been a lifelong, well, I won't say lifelong, I've been, since my 20s, I have been a student of how to connect, how to network. It's something I've taken seriously on how to learn, and I've just gotten very good at it. And I networked my way. I'm actually calling right now from the estate of a very famous billionaire that you probably would have heard of in Marin, and we're like launching, he wants me to help him launch something that has to do with writing, and I'm helping him.
That you can't talk about yet.
I can't talk about, and I'm not even getting paid. I just like wanted to help this guy because he's really cool.
You are, Michael, literally one of the best networkers I know. And before we end today, I want to make sure that everybody has something that they can take away from the call, even before they read the book, so that they can start to implement it. And I want it to be about that. So
if you can share
a tip or a strategy,
absolutely.
That would be amazing.
We will get to that. So this person that I've connected with here, you know, is very influential, and it was like 8 degrees of separation, not even six. It was like, it was eight. And it's learning how to network. And I won't go too much more into that content now. We'll get into that towards the end of the call. But basically, I got to these people mostly through networking. A few of them through cold, just calling their offices and telling them about what I was up to. And that is related to another one of our street smart skills, which is perhaps as important as networking, which is sales. And we'll definitely talk about that also, because for most people, sales is a dirty word. And that may be true if you're selling used cars and cheesy kind of thing, you know, things over the internet or something. There are contexts where it's cheesy and dirty, but to actually be doing sales at a high level, it cannot be sleazy. It has to be high integrity, because the high-level people will just laugh you out of the room if you start doing sleazy kind of sales stuff.
Yeah. And so in the book, are you giving people the actual specifics as to what is non-sleazy sales, how to do networking, how to connect with someone who is 8 degrees of separation, and those kinds of specifics, or are you telling them, here, you need to go out and learn these things, and here's how you go out and do it?
Right. It's a little bit more the latter. So we've all heard the distinction, you know, between teach a man to fish versus give a man a fish. Well, I have a third distinction, which is teach a man to teach himself to fish, which is actually even more high leverage. And so you know, in my book, there's basically what I've done, and we'll get into more context here in the whole call, but what I've done is define 7 skills that I think make up street smarts. So my basic argument is, look, I don't care whether you're a high school dropout or you graduated from Harvard Law School with honors, you're not going to be as successful as you want to be if you don't also learn street smarts. So that's part one. Part two is, here are what I think, from interviewing a lot of very street smart people, are the 7 key skills that make up street smarts. We've already talked about 2 of them, sales and networking, and we'll go into the other ones also. Now, so there's 7 skills. I'm not going to teach 7 really important skills in one, you know, relatively quick-to-read book. But what I can do
Very
is basically
read,
say,
yeah.
Look, here's how you can teach yourself. Here's how these people taught themselves. Here's how I taught myself. These are the resources. This is the learning plan. And here's your book, and go for it. That's the intention.
Great. Great. Yeah. So who are some of these other folks that you've interviewed? Let's list them out.
There was kind of a mix of famous and non-famous people. The famous people that probably most of the people on the call have heard of, Sean Parker, who was the founding president of Facebook. If you've seen the movie The Social Network, he was portrayed by Justin Timberlake. By the way, he's way, way different than that portrayal. Like, they really portray him as a prick in that movie, and my experience of him is actually like
that he's
really,
not.
Yeah, he's just not. He's just like a really down to earth, like very smart, cool guy. Anyways, so him, co-founder of Facebook, Dustin Moskovitz, John Paul DeJoria, he has a really interesting story. He was homeless at 2 points of it in his life. He was living out of a van, and at one point picking up bottles for the 5-cent recycling fee so that his son, who lived in his van, or I think it was his car even, not a van, could have food to eat. He somehow scraped together $700 and went into a deal with a hairdresser called Paul Mitchell, and they formed John Paul Mitchell Systems Hair Care Product, which is now, you know, one of the major hair care brands in the world. It's a multi-billion-dollar company, and he's been on the Forbes 400 billionaire list for, you know, forever.
Michael, so, I just have to stop you for a minute and tell you that I love stories like that because in my own experience, and I wonder if this plays out with what you've seen with the other millionaires and billionaires that you've interviewed, that when you're willing to go that far down, homeless, picking up cans for, you know, the 5-cent recycling, not because you've got some sort of a mental illness or, you know, something where you can't take care of yourself, but because you're not willing to do anything other than what you see as a real, you know, possibility, vision for your future, et cetera, the sky then becomes the limit along the lines of what you saw with John Paul DeJoria. Did you come across any others where that was the case?
Yes, absolutely. So all of the people I interviewed are self-made. So it wouldn't be that interesting to interview someone who's like, you know, born with $1 billion and, you know,
right.
and didn't go to college. And there are a lot of people like that. But
right.
everyone was self-made. I would say half of them grew up in kind of normal, comfortable middle-class environments where they certainly weren't impoverished, but they didn't have any huge advantages in life either. And then the other half, roughly, are more like John Paul DeJoria's story, where they really, you know, literally grew up on the wrong side of the tracks and grew up in poverty, grew up in, you know, abusive or broken families, and just through grit pulled themselves out. And on that topic, you said that's actually one of the key kind of street smart skills that I want to talk about a lot, and that is the relationship to risk. And we should go into that a lot, because a lot of people on the call I know are maybe in jobs that they're not super happy about. They may want to start something that's more aligned with their passions, that feels more meaningful, yet those are always riskier. They tend to be more uncertain than just sticking with the safe societal script. So this is a really, really important dynamic to dive into, because there's pitfalls on both sides. We all know that if you leave your comfortable, safe job with your paycheck and want to start a venture that is more aligned with your passions, That is risky. I mean, ventures inherently are risky. Otherwise, more people would be doing them. And there is a chance that, it won't work out. And, you know, if you have a family to feed, that's a very, very scary thing. So there's obviously risks on that side. What people don't talk about as much, and I talk about this a lot in the book, is that there's also risks on the other side. And we never talk about it, but it's damn well true that if you are doing some job that you don't give a shit about and you really don't care and you just did it because your parents wanted you to do it or it just seemed safe and you've got a nice paycheck coming in, I mean, you're materially taken care of, but we all know, you know, that we don't live by bread alone. And if you are, you know, it's countless the number of people who have their material needs taken care of, but just feel empty and dead and spiritually dead alive inside. And that is a real risk that never gets discussed. So we need to develop the muscle, the facility inside of ourselves to navigate those two poles more gracefully than most of us know how. And there's a lot about that in my book. One of the main skills is to learn how to kind of put your feet in the water with riskier things. So that, I mean, there is sort of the stereotype of the person who mortgages their house and, you know, basically more or less puts everything on red in roulette or puts everything in, you know,
That's me.
Yeah.
I'm a put it all on red kind of girl, but so most people are not.
some people do that, and you know that if they do that with consciousness and intention, I'm not going to knock it. That's not my style, and most people aren't like that. They don't, and so most people, there needs to be a kind of a continuous easing into more and more risk, so that it's not just, you know, crazy amount of risk all at once. And part of the reason that's important is that there's a learning curve on, you know, your new venture. And so it's much better to be learning where there's less at risk than when you've got your entire, you know, mortgage and your kids' future at risk. I'd much rather learn, at, you know, when I have $1,000 at risk than, you know, my entire financial future.
Well, and one of the things that I love is you actually give a step-by-step plan for people to do that, to ease in as opposed to diving headfirst off the, you know, diving board and maybe hitting the shallow end.
Yeah.
So you're educating people about that right in the book.
And that a lot of the people I interviewed did it that way. And I actually have a personal story about how I did that, which was, you know, I kind of did the, you know, put it all on red model at one point in my life. You know, my dream, my passion was to be a writer, to make my living as a writer. I had no background in it. I, you know, didn't study English in college. By the way, I did graduate college, so I'm not an example of the people I write about. I didn't study English in college, though. Basically had no background in this, but this was my dream. And I kind of removed myself from economic life for about 2 years, lived in my parents' basement in my mid-20s, the proverbial, you know, moving back to your parents' basement. By the way, total aside, right now about 40% of 20-somethings move back in with their parents after college in their 20s.
Smart.
that just shows, like, what our educational system is doing. Anyways, back to the point. So I did this. I kind of put it all red. Like, I want to write a book, and this is my dream. And I spent 2 years. I went into moderate levels of credit card debt to fund this, and I emerged with a very experimental. Not only was I taking risks financially, I was taking risks artistically. You know, my thing I created was like super experimental, kind of nonfiction narrative that was in fragment. It was very weird, and I would not like someone to read it now. I'm not proud of it. Anyways, the point is it got rejected 22 times, and quite harshly. One of the editors who rejected it, the rejection slip read, it was to my agent at the time, it read, I'm going to pass on this project. Mr. Ellsberg is not a strong enough writer to make up for the fact that he is simply an unlikable person. And it's like, wow, ouch. So that was like pretty much like total fail. I kept going, you know, and at a certain point I realized, you know what, this cannot continue. I want to have my dream as a writer, but this method is unworkable. And I gave up that like full on bet, you know, put it all on red model. And then, and I tell the rest of the story in the book in more detail, but essentially I started building up sources of income that were less meaningful to me, but more steady related to writing. So I would do like commercial copywriting, you know, proposal writing, consulting on proposals and copywriting. By the way, I taught myself all that stuff. I didn't learn it in school. Then once money started coming in from that, I started taking, you know, somewhat like measured risks with doing my passion. So I wrote my first book, The Power of Eye Contact. You know, it's not some wild literary, you know, masterpiece that's going to change the earth. It's just a straightforward book that's very helpful to someone who wants to learn about that topic. So I was taking less risk artistically, and I was taking less risk, you know, that it was I got like a $20,000 advance for it, so it clearly wasn't enough to live on. And I just started building from there. And now I'm doing my dream. I got enough of an advance for this education book that I was able to live on it while I wrote it. And you know, I am now at the point where my money and my meaning are aligned. And that is one of the street smart skills that I go into a lot in a lot of depth, and I think it's very important.
And you did it in a calculated way, and that is one of the things that I really enjoyed about the book as well, is that for folks who aren't like me, put it all on red and, you know, let's just go for it type of people, but do want to think it through, want to be smart about it and logical and use their left brain, this book is going to guide you to do it. And before we, you know, get more into some of the other topics that you touched on, I just want to get back to these people that you interviewed. You interviewed these millionaires and billionaires. You mentioned Sean Parker, Brian Franklin, who is a coach of mine and yours, Evan Pagan, who many folks on the call are going to know, good friend of yours now. I don't know if he was when you did the interview.
At all. And that's related to networking. He became a good friend. So.
Right. So we're going to talk about how that happened. How long did you spend interviewing people and compiling your research for all of this before you could finally say, okay, I know what these street smart skills are. I can, you know, put them together into 7 success skills that everybody needs to have in order to get free of this employee mindset, dive into the entrepreneurial mindset, which is, by the way, success skill number 7, and put it together into a way that people can actually absorb it and take action on it?
It was about 2 years of research, and most of that was just that networking really takes time. It is not a skill that can be rushed. You know, a lot of people, you know, they'll lose a job and they'll be like, oh, shit, I got to network now to get a job, and that's like way too little too late. It's like it can be years before you get really good results from networking. So it's got to be continuous. Even if you're in a job you hate right now, but you're going to stay in it for a little while you know, build another venture, you got to be networking.
Okay, well, let's dive into talking about networking then, because it's come up several times, and it's clearly, you know, key, like one of the key success skills. I have to say, Michael, I feel like it's one of the success skills that, in one respect, I feel like I'm really great at it, and in another respect, I feel like I'm really not great at it. And here's where it breaks down for me, and maybe for other people as well. I feel like I'm great at making contact with people who possibly could help me. I'm really bad at actually getting to the helping me or me helping them part in a way that's meaningful. So how can people, first of all, connect with the right people, and then second of all, have it move into actual relationship?
Right. So let me just understand. So you are good at sort of making initial, what's the context of the initial contact? Just sort of meeting someone at a party or kind of reaching out online?
Yeah, you know, it could be any number of things. I'm great at reaching out and connecting with people and just, you know, the way I met you, the way I've met all of the people that we know. I know, you know, thousands of people on Twitter and Facebook. So these are all very superficial relationships. And where my networking breaks down is in taking things to a deeper level where we're actually in relationship, we're actually helping each other, because networking is really a waste of time if you don't take it to that next level, right?
Yeah. Now, okay, well, this is going to be fun because I have a kind of trademark networking secret, if you will, and I actually use that very directly and specifically on you, quote unquote, on you when we first met.
Oh, this is exciting.
Because I wanted to be connected with you. I thought you were really cool, and so I did my networking thing on you. And
okay.
Here's the key, is that it is so high integrity and non-sleaze that you can openly tell someone that you're doing it, and it's not like, oh, you're pulling a trick on someone. So
right.
that's part of why it's really effective. So essentially, Alexis and I met at a workshop, and I had not even heard about her before, but just talking to her and hearing what she was up to, I could tell that she is a very powerful woman and that is up to really amazing things, and that she is someone that I would like to connect with and have in my world. And so when we were talking, Alexis, what I do when I'm meeting people is I'm constantly inquiring about what's important to them, usually professionally, but sometimes personally also. But let's say it's in a professional context. I'm constantly inquiring, like, what are you up to? Like, what's really going on for you right now? What are you really excited about? What's challenging about what you're doing right now? People don't really like to talk about their problems, but they do like to talk about their challenges, because that kind of makes them feel like they're, you know, up to big things and they've got challenges. I was asking you that kind of stuff, and it came up that you were very interested in writing a book. And it's like, bingo, red light. Okay, like a light bulb goes off in my head. Alexis is up to something big, and it's something that I can help her with. Now, in case you think this is, you know, people out there, in case you think this is just a coincidence, I tend to steer the conversation when people are talking about their businesses to ask about things that are relevant to things I can help with. So I know a lot about writing. So when I'm talking to someone about their business, I'm usually asking things like, you know, how do you market it? Like, what kind of copy do you use? Like, have you ever thought about writing a book about your business? I'm always asking those questions. If I knew a lot about, social media, which I'm no big expert in. But if I was, then I would be like, hey, what's the social media part of what you're doing? You know, da-da-da-da. So I know a lot about writing, and so it wasn't just a coincidence that you told me you were working on a book. I was asking about writing type things. And as soon as you told me that, then I switch into full-on service mode. Like, not like, hey, I do this for a living and I want you to be my client. You know, there are contexts where you want someone to be their client, but that's not networking. That is prospecting and sales. I'm talking about networking. In this context, I just wanted a connection. So full-on service mode. Like, okay, well, you know what? I know a lot about what you're trying to do, and I've done X, Y, Z. I've already done what you're trying to do. Like, why don't we meet up sometime, and we can just brainstorm, and I'll help you achieve exactly what you're wanting to do. And, I mean, do you remember us having that conversation?
Of sorts. I don't necessarily remember the exact specific situation, but sure, I remember that there was an invitation from you to reach out whenever I needed support about whatever it was, and I guess it was writing a book.
Right, and then we did have and I remember this very clearly, we had an hour-long conversation going on the phone at one point soon after that, going over your book ideas. And
I do remember that.
And
yep.
And I looked at a book proposal of yours. I gave you very detailed feedback on a book proposal. And so the point is, Not that now she remembers me always as that guy who helped her with her book, because clearly
because
she
I really
like,
don't.
You forgot that that even happened. But
right.
My bet is you do have an impression of me as like, oh, this guy is a giver. He's not a taker.
Always helping me, always
like
wanting to do things.
He wants to help.
Absolutely.
Like most, so this is really key. 95% of people do networking wrong because they go at it with a taker mentality. So it's basically, I mean, you probably get this. I get it all the time. You know, people write me. They don't know me. I don't know them. And, like, the first thing they do is ask for something. And it's like, you know, where do they get this idea? I mean, I'm a giving person, but I tend to focus my giving in my community. So people who are in my community, I'm incredibly generous. Like, someone is in my circle or my world, like, I will go to the ends of the earth to help them, especially if they're really in need around something. But if it's a total stranger, you know, people just ask for favors from strangers. And here's a basic rule of networking. Don't ask for favors from strangers. Only ask for favors and help from friends and warm acquaintances, which means step one of the process is to become friends and warm acquaintances. And how do you do that? By being of service, by being a giver. Everyone wants to have a giver in their life. Everyone wants to have a generous person in their life. And so that's how it happens. And that's how it happened with us.
Yes. So what you're saying then is that if someone wants to get into your circle, they do it by giving, not asking.
Exactly. And here's where the long-term aspect of it is. I mean, you know, I spend an enormous amount of time of service to people that I don't know super well, but that I want to know. I mean, I'm here right now in this estate, like helping this very powerful person launch something, and I'm not getting paid for it, and I have no idea if any money will come out of this ever for me. But what I do know is that I'm of service to someone who I respect. And that's a good thing. So I spend a lot of time doing that. And sometimes my wife, Jenna, thinks I'm crazy. She's like, she's always like, well, aren't they paying you for this? And I'm like, no, this is networking, honey. And she's kind of accepted that I'm crazy and that I do enormous amounts of work for free with people I want to connect with.
Okay, that is so, so important, because I heard something very similar to a guy that I watched rise up in the social media ranks very quickly, went from nobody anybody knew into someone everybody knew, who all these, you know, very popular websites were promoting him. And when I interviewed him and I asked him how this happened, he told me the exact same thing that you're telling me now.
Yeah, it is.
He went out of his way. Yeah.
It is the secret. It is the secret. Now, and probably most of the people on the call have heard of the book, The Secret, or seen the movie, and that the secret they promote is, like, sit around and, like, think about all the riches you want to have. Well, you know what? I don't think that works very well. I've never seen it work. I've tried it. I've tried just about everything. I don't see that having much effect. But this is the secret. If you find people that are connected and influential that you want to connect with, you find a way to somehow get in dialogue or conversation with them, and you focus relentlessly on how you can be of service, like, magic happens. I mean, just absolute magic. It is pretty much my main reason that I've had any success at all in my life, is that secret.
And what is going to happen, at least from my own personal experience, is exactly what you've identified with Jenna, but for most people it's going to be their own internal parts are going to say, when are you going to get paid for this? Are you getting paid for this? Are you going to get anything back for this? Like, is this really worth it?
Right.
And I think that our jobs are to really exercise mind control.
Yes.
And remind ourselves that this has a purpose, and that we can give, and it will come back. Now, what I wonder is, I know that there's a lot of folks who are listening to this who are massive givers, but they're not giving in a way that makes sense.
Yes, thank you for bringing that up. That is a very important point, and it's quite related to the topic of education. So there is kind of a long history of people giving of themselves, you know, quite excessively, quite extreme. over to some more powerful person in hopes of rising up the ranks. It's you know, these days it's called an internship. It used to be called an apprenticeship. You know, Mark Twain dropped out of eighth grade to become a printer's apprentice. Benjamin Franklin dropped out, I'm not sure quite which grade, but I don't even think it was high school yet. I mean, he dropped out quite young to become a legally indentured servant to his brother's printing shop. And so, you know, these are, we have a lot of support in our culture for basically like, hey, go and make someone's photocopies and fetch their coffee for 5 years and be basically, you know, excuse my language, and basically be their bitch.
Right.
And then you're going to rise up the ranks. And you know what? It doesn't work that way because no one, I mean, there are examples, but in general, there are counterexamples, but in general, you know, when you're looking for leadership talent, you know, you're not looking at like the person who's just bringing you coffee and has been doing that for 5 years.
Right.
Look elsewhere for right leadership to rise up the ranks. So the point is, it's not just helping in any old way. It is helping in high leverage ways. And the only way you can help in high leverage ways is to actually develop on your own expertise that is in demand to a lot of people. So if I'm on, you know, if I'm the world's expert in fixing a certain type of, you know, washing machine, and I know everything about this one type of thing, that is not in demand by a lot of people, and it won't really get me very far for what we're talking about. However, if I know a more broadly applicable skill, such as writing, where most people who are in business have some writing component to what they're doing. Social media is another example. I mean, there's tons of these areas. Tech, you know, law. You know that if you're a lawyer, everyone is like wanting legal advice.
Right.
And
right.
Know, there's these areas where kind of everyone seems to want some help. And you've got to learn to develop some valuable, economically valuable skills in that area. And most of those skills are going to be taught. You're going to have to teach yourself. And that's bringing us back to this concept of self-education. So, you know, very few people in my experience come out of a undergraduate or even a graduate program with skills that are instantly highly valued on the marketplace. And we see that right now. 22% of college graduates under the age of 25 right now are unemployed, and another 22% are doing jobs that did not require a college education. They're, you know, taking your coffee order at Starbucks in the morning. So almost 50% of people who went through a college education right now who are young and oftentimes incurring quite a bit of debt. The average debt now is $26,000. That's a lot for a young person. Do not have any economically marketable skills. The market is not valuing the skills that they learned in their formal education. So you have to learn these skills on your own. And it's all about self-education.
Yeah, and that is exactly what your book is leading people to understand is what is the self-education that I need to be getting beyond college, beyond law school, beyond a master's program, beyond a PhD. You can have all of those degrees. You still need the skills that Michael is talking about in the book, the skill to the skill of networking, a major, major one, and he just shared with you some major tips that apply them right away and see what happens for you. We talked already about sales. I can honestly say that knowing how to sell in a way that feels right to me is the single, number one, single biggest factor in my own business success. There's lots of different ways to do selling. They don't teach you that in college, law school, and even in your MBA program or PhD program.
Yes, this is very, very important. I think the trifecta of street smart skills is networking, sales, and marketing. There's I have seven, but to me that's like the powerhouse right there. And we've talked a lot about networking. Let's talk for a second about sales. What you said is incredibly important. I cannot, you know, if I had a penny or a dime for every talented person I know who is poor because they have an inappropriate misconception about the concept of sales, I'd never have to work another day. I mean, I'd have a barn load full of pennies. And so this is incredibly common. I mean, I meet people like this all the time. And I'll just say flatly, if you do not like selling, that's on you. You have not learned selling properly. If you learn selling well, it is an incredibly enjoyable experience, because good sales is about talking to human beings, finding out what's important for them, finding out exactly what their problems are, and finding out how, if at all, how you can help them. And that if at all is very important, because if you can't, the first step is finding out what their problem is, like really getting clear, not what they say their problem is, but what that like deep, dark thing that they only think about in the shower is. And you get to that level where you're talking on that level, it's a very deep, meaningful conversation. And then if you can help them with that, like they're so happy. They're like, oh my God, no one has even articulated my problem the way you do, and certainly no one can help me with it. But it's only if you can help them. This is where the integrity comes in. If it's not like trying to foist a bunch of shit on people, if you get a clear picture of someone's problem and you really don't think you can help them with that problem, don't sell them what you're offering. It's not an appropriate match. And instead, if possible, refer them to a better solution, even one of your competitors. And
absolutely.
So what you're doing there is maximizing for happy customers. You're not, most salespeople maximize for sales. That is why most of people find sales icky, because they're maximizing to just unload product to whoever as quickly as possible. But if you maximize for happy customers, you're always, it's like a screening process. The first thing you're looking for is this person actually an appropriate match for what I'm offering?
And this comes back to what you said in the beginning of the book, because what I'm hearing is a subtext under everything that you're saying, though I don't know that you specifically really say this. It's not one of your success skills, but I'm picking up on it, is that we have to learn how to get beyond the scarcity mindset that has been conditioned into us, whether it's from the education system or our parents or, the ethers, whatever it is. Most of us have been imprinted with this scarcity mindset that causes us to network the wrong way, that causes us to do sales the wrong way, ways that don't feel good or icky. But when you shift this scarcity mindset into a mindset of, oh, my needs are met, which you give the whole plan for in the beginning of the book, so that you're not having to come to it from a scarcity mindset, then you can network from a place of abundance. You can sell from a place of abundance. And that shifts everything.
What comes up in mind when you say that, absolutely, what you just said is spot on. And what comes up for mind, and my assumption is most people on the call probably have already gone to college, have their BA. There may be some who don't, but the majority probably do. So the relevant question a lot of people are facing is, should I continue my education further than that? There's every job out there gets 1,000, every job posting gets 1,000 replies. I've had the experience of posting jobs for, relatively low level things, like some kind of, assisting for $10 an hour. And I'm getting, people with masters. I've literally gotten a person with a master's degree from Harvard University for a $10 an hour administrative job before. And I hired the person. So my point is, that's the environment we're in right now. A lot of people are like, wow, well, how can I compete with these masters from Harvard if I only have a BA? And so they want to go back and get a master's degree. There was an article recently in the New York Times with the headline, "The Masters as the New Bachelors." So there's all these people thinking, okay, I've got to go back to school, got to get my MBA, got to get my master's, got to get my PhD, my JD. And now this is tying this back to what you just said. If you go and spend $100,000 on a graduate education, 2 years of a $50,000 master's program, most of that will probably be put on debt. Most people don't have 100 grand cash just sitting around for, discretionary spending. So that will be on debt. If you spend $100,000 and have $100,000 in debt, you will automatically guaranteed be in a scarcity mindset when you graduate.
Yep.
You will be like desperate. Like, I've got to get fucking job right now. Pardon my French, but like, that's the passion
that's true.
that is there. And here's the bind. if you're in that position, you will be in the scarcity mindset, and you will thus do everything the wrong way and be repelling any economic opportunity that can come your way, because you'll be so desperate and scared and like, I got to get this job now, that it repels opportunity. Opportunity
Absolutely.
Does not get attracted to people in that state of high-level stress.
And so this is one of the most important things that you can be also passing on to your children. You know, maybe you've already invested in your education in this way with, you know, degrees that aren't really benefiting you, or maybe are some, you know, marginal degree if you have a professional degree. Maybe there's some things you couldn't do without it. But right now, there's very likely things that you're doing inadvertently, because you're just not conscious of it, just not aware, that are imparting this scarcity mentality onto your children. And if there's any gift that you can give them, what I'm hearing you say, Michael, is give them the gift of knowing how to create abundance, not from a million, you know, make millions place, but from I can meet my needs and get the education I need to create what I actually want.
Yes. This is so important, this point about kids. And I know you're a parent and that you – this is really a big focus of yours, is imparting
yeah.
these mindsets on your children.
Absolutely.
And, you know, Jenna and I have been talking about this. We just had our one-year anniversary, and we're in the dialogue about if we're going to build a family, and if so, what it will look like.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the key kind of stress areas I had around the idea of us having kids was that I just despise the way we raise kids to fit them in educational cookie cutters in our system. And the amount of stress that gets put on kids to get into the right school and get the right SAT scores is just so revolting to me. And so we had to have a really frank discussion, and I said, I will not have children if that's how we're going to have to raise them. And Jenna
mm-hmm.
was totally on the same page, and she, oh, by the way, she's in my book. She dropped out of college her junior year and is now a very successful entrepreneur. So she's completely on the same page. So the point here is there's a lot of scarcity mentality around the education system. So the basic idea, I mean, I'm stereotyping and exaggerating a little bit here, but not too much. The basic idea is if you don't get into a good college, you will be a garbage person for the rest of your life. You will be
a waitress.
A waitress. If you don't, uh-huh. certainly if you don't go, and even if you don't get into one of the best ones, your kids will be asking about fries orders for the rest of their life. And if mm-hmm. that's your worldview, which is totally a completely false worldview, but if that is your worldview, you will be super stressed out about them, you know, studying for their, you know, not going out and playing like kids should be doing, but like sitting indoors studying, you know, standardized test practice questions. And it creates this entire fear complex in kids that I think is rampant right now and is at a national boiling point, crisis point, I think, around, you know, how much stress kids are under.
Well, I'm dealing with it in my own personal life. My ex-husband is exactly what you've described. He is like adamant that they go to school, that they have, you know, go to college. And we, in fact, just got into a big fight about it yesterday. And what I did is I pushed your book at him. I said, just read this,
yeah.
and then we can talk about
it. I actually hope that my book liberates parents. I didn't write it for parents. I wrote it for, you know, people who want to use it for themselves, but I actually hope that it liberates parents, because what I hope it shows is that there's actually more paths to success than you know, getting into the best college and getting an entry-level corporate job. You know, that is one
yeah.
path to success, but that's the path that everyone is trying. So it's highly, highly competitive. It is a extremely stressful way to go about it, and my argument is there's easier ways. I'm not saying it's like, you know, easy money or going to be a walk in the park, but, you know, you can go out and get really high quality education in real world skills, the ones
yeah.
we've been talking about, for relatively cheap. You know, you read
yeah.
books about them. Books are cheap these days. You know,
I mean your book.
Yeah, exactly.
is the starting point. And
yeah.
even if you're coming out of college, right, or out of law school, and you know, there's millions of people graduating law school who now can't get jobs. Mm-hmm. Back when I was coming out of law school, getting a job was very easy. But now, you know, every year hundreds of thousands of lawyers are graduating, and millions of lawyers don't have jobs and don't have the skills necessary to start their own thing, to just take their professional degree and do something with it. And so what I'm hearing you say is put together your own curriculum. If you don't know how to build your own curriculum, start with Michael's book, which is going to guide you, because he interviewed the people that we talked about before, but not just, you didn't just interview like online people. You interviewed fashion magnate Russell Simmons. You interviewed Pink Floyd songwriter and lead guitarist David Gilmour. So John Paul DeJoria, the Paul Mitchell guy, Philip Ruffin, he went from a department store employee to now the owner of Treasure Island on the Las Vegas Strip. So these people have done it. You can do it, but you need to have some guidance in order to do that. So I see that we're getting close to the top of the hour, and I want to make sure that before we do, we talk specifically about risk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it is such an important piece. I think it comes along with what we were just talking about with respect to the abundance mindset versus the scarcity mentality that so many of us are passed on, you know, from our parents.
Yeah.
And we're taught not to take risk. And each one of these people that you interviewed are risk takers.
Yeah.
So how do people really, you know, buck the norm and be willing, especially like everything's so scary right now and oh my God, what am I gonna do?
Right. So I think there's two steps here. One is to free yourself from the matrix of kind of the employment passivity employment cycle, where you don't really know how to go about things yourself, so you depend on an employer. The employer wants to keep you employed. You know, no employer wants their employee to go off and start their own business, so they're not really teaching you the skills that you need to know to go out on your own. The first is to get off that matrix grid and be self-employed, doing anything, like just self-employed. It doesn't have to be your passion. It just has to be not having a boss. And the way to do that is to learn the skills in my book, really, to be frank, and specifically to be really good at sales, to teach yourself sales in a high-integrity way. And I have a whole kind of outline about how to do that in the book, to teach yourself networking in a high-integrity way. Again, networking is one of those words, dirty words. People have a bad connotation, and it good networking should not have a bad connotation because it's a very high-integrity activity. Learn marketing. Learn how to build a personal brand around yourself, around what you're doing. I have a chapter on that. Learn what I call the entrepreneurial mindset, which is the mindset of all these people in the book. It's like the active, like, make shit happen no matter what mindset, rather than the passive, like, my boss didn't give me the right, you know, such and such, and therefore I couldn't do it, kind of victim, passive mentality. You know, get all of those things. These are highly transferable skills. If you know, just learning sales, you know, you can make a very good living on your own if you have very good sales skills or marketing skills. Just using these street smart skills to get off the matrix and to be creating your own financial reality. That is step one.
And what you're talking about here is something that I call in my Money Map program a learning business. Begin with a learning business that allows you to apply all of these skills that Michael lays out in the book and gives you detail on how to acquire them and how to apply them to something that doesn't have so much pressure as like the thing that you're supposed to do in the world and, oh, my God, if you fail, it's the end of your life.
Right.
But it's just
exactly. It's much better. Yeah. Like these are general skills of success, and it's much better to learn them where there's not so much pressure about, like, expressing your unique gift in the world, because that just adds a whole other layer of pressure, as you just said. So that's step one. Step two is that once you – and it takes about 2 years to learn those. That's a very common experience I've seen. This is not a get-rich-quick thing. This is not overnight success. This is 2 years of pretty serious self-devoted study to these success skills. But think about that, 2 years. I mean, you know, we all hopefully, knock on wood, have many, many decades ahead of us, all
yes.
of us. This is, you know, a fraction of one of those decades to free yourself from the system. I think that's a good investment. And you can do it while you're employed. So you don't have to, you know, you can be moonlighting, you can be learning these skills on the side, at night, on weekends.
Yeah.
So
it's very easy for people to get discouraged when they hear that, oh my God, 2 years. But just reframe it, as Michael is saying. It's only 2 years, and how long did you spend in college or law school or getting a PhD? This is your PhD. This is your master's. It's your master's in life. It's your master's in success. Invest the 2 years to get it while you're in an economically safe place, if at all possible.
Yeah. So I've talked about step one. Step two, then, is then to wrap those success skills, those street smart skills, in something you're actually passionate about. So, and this is a big mistake a lot of people I see make, is that they're in a job they don't care about, as most people are. You know, most people in the world don't like their job, and there's statistics around that. And so they're like, well, I want to do something more passionate, you know, that I'm passionate about. I want to start this nonprofit that, you know, helps orphans, or I want to write a novel, or I want to, you know, start a music business or something. But they've tried to skip directly to step two. They did not go through step one, which is to learn the success skills that will make that possible. So they,
right.
what happens typically is they go and they start their little inn, you know, because that's their lifestyle business and they want to have a bed and breakfast and that's their dream and their passion. They didn't go through step one. They didn't learn the success skills. And then it falls, you know, they fall flat on their ass and they go right back to seeking employment. So let's
right.
avoid that one. Let's go through step one, learn the skills. Once you really know how to generate resources with these success skills, sales, marketing, networking, mindset, once you've got clear evidence from the world that you're on the right path, that money is flowing, resources are flowing, then start experimenting with wrapping those success skills around your passion. And it will usually look very different than it would have had you not had the success skills. Not just obviously you'll be more successful, but what you choose to do will look different. Like when I was, when I had no success skills and I had this very kind of naive, romantic vision of myself as like a literary superstar artist, the kind of things I wrote were very different than what I'm writing now when it's embedded in a sense of me, you know, reaching the world and getting my stuff out in the world with these success skills. I choose to write about different kinds of things. And you know, here's one last point on this, is that, you know, a lot of people have a really dirty word around sales and marketing, and they say, well, I just want to create my art. You know, I have an artistic vision or a philanthropic political vision, and it shouldn't be sullied by marketing. Well, to me, that's the most ridiculous statement I could possibly imagine, because if you think about it, what is marketing? Marketing is not like good marketing is not pushing a bunch of shit on people in a sleazy way. Good marketing is getting people to care about what you're talking about and relate it to things that are important to them. So good marketing is like getting your message out in the world. If you really care about what you're doing and you don't have any marketing around it, your message will just flounder and you'll be the only one listening to it. So,
yeah.
You know, marketing is not like an add-on. It's essential to part of living your vision, which is getting your vision out in the world. That is marketing. That is high integrity marketing.
Yes. Well, you're going to learn this how to do that and a whole lot more in Michael's book. It's called The Education of Millionaires. It's not what you think, and it's not too late. And I know that we want to make sure we get to questions today. First of all, we're going to tell you how you can ask your questions, how you can talk with either Michael or me about anything that's come up for you during this call. You're not sure what to do next. You want some live coaching from either one of us right now. You can't get that anywhere else other than one other way. We're going to tell you how you might be able to get on the phone privately with each of us, because you want to be able to take that next step and you don't know exactly what to do. But before we tell you how you'll be able to do that, let's tell folks how they can ask questions so that they can get in the queue for questions, because we do have a little time for that.
So,
and then we'll tell you how you can.
on, and we'll try to take as many questions as possible here. On your, if you're calling by phone, you can press *2, and that will raise your hand, and then I can unmute people individually and ask questions. So if you if you're on the phone and you want to ask a question, press *2. Be patient because we do have a lot of people who want to ask questions. If you're listening via Skype or webcast, you can go to that page where you logged in to get the Skype and webcast, and there's a Q&A form on that page towards the left of the page, and you can submit that. And so, so we are going to try to answer as many as possible. Before we dive into Q&A, I just want to give people kind of a sense of how they can go further. If there's a lot of people on the line here, I assume that means you're intrigued and curious about what we've been talking about for the last hour. You know, I'll just come out and say it. I think getting my book is a great next step. It's 18 bucks on Amazon. It, you know, I'm obviously I'm biased, but I think 18 bucks is a very good investment for continuing your education around this topic. And you know, I've worked very, very hard to make it a high value book. It's not one of those books that's just like pitching my other services. I don't have other services. I don't have a back end. I don't have some mastermind program I'm trying to get you in. None of that. Like I spent 2 years just giving you a lot of value in that book, and that's what I'm doing. So, 18 bucks. You can go to my site ellsberg.com, ellsberg.com, and there's links there on. If you go to the page, the Education of Millionaires, there's links to all the different online retailers. It's coming out in about 10 days, so you'll pre-order it. You'll get it in 10 days. There are I get a lot of requests from people to continue the dialogue personally. They have some business question, some, you know, thing that is eating away at them and that they think that I have the answer based on what I have been talking about, and I, you know, it's very likely I do if you've been relating to what I'm talking about here. So I do want to give one way people can continue the dialogue with me. As I said, I'm a full-time writer. I don't have like a coaching program. I don't offer my coaching for sale very much. I mean, basically, like I do a one-off session here or there, but it's really not available publicly. If you're on this call though, and if you want to buy 25 copies of the book, you'll get all the books, and we will one-on-one spend 90 minutes together going in depth in your business. Whether it's marketing, whether it's sales, whether it's how to write a book and get published, any of
how to get an advance,
how to get an advance for a book, any area where you've seen that I have expertise based on what I've talked about, or you know, checking out the description of the book, we will apply that for 90 minutes to your situation. I'm very, very good at giving you value in those kind of 90-minute sessions in a focused way. So if you want to buy 25 copies. Do that, forward the receipt to me, like buy it online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Forward the receipt. There's an email address, which is privatelist@ellsberg.com. Privatelist, one word, @ellsberg.com. Forward the receipt. We'll set it up in the next couple weeks to have that. And you might ask, well, what am I going to do with 25 copies? Well, I'm constantly giving books. I mean, I spend like thousands of dollars a year myself on books to give people in my network. So this would be a great way to start all the networking we're talking about. So before we dive into Q&A, which we're now going to get to, Alexis, you had said that you had a little special something for us too.
I do, and I just want to say that I kicked off a relationship with Michael Port, who many of you will know, the author of Book Yourself Solid and other books, must be about 6 years ago now, by I think buying either 50 or 100 copies of Book Yourself Solid when it first came out because I was going to get a coaching session with him. And that relationship ended up turning into me being one of the coaches of Book Yourself Solid in the back in the early days and lots of other things that we did together. And so this is it. This is how it starts. If you want to get close to someone, this is how you do it. And with Michael's offer of 25 books, it's super, super inexpensive way to get connected to Michael and get his help which, I mean, he can help you with so many things. He's helped me tremendously in my own life and business. And so for those of you, and this is only for three people, because as many of you will know, I'm taking a major step back. My private coaching time is not available right now at any price. I'm like looking at my calendar for October, November, December, and it's both scary and exciting to see so much freedom on there. And so this is only going to be for three of you. I think, Michael, you'd asked if I would do one, but I love you so much, and I want this work, your work out there in the world. This is for three.
Thank you so much, Alexis.
So for three of you, if you buy 50 books, you have three different options. You can, and 50 books, I think at what, $20 a book approximately, will cost you about $1,000. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you'll end up with 50 books that you can give to friends, family, clients, colleagues, who are going to tremendously thank you, for making this investment in them. You can either spend an hour with me on anything you want, your business, making the leap from a corporate job or employment into your own entrepreneurial venture, pricing and packaging your products and services. Maybe you're charging hourly right now and you want to price and package. You want a business model that's far higher leverage. And so you want to offer packages and you don't know how to do the pricing and you want some support with that. Normally I would charge a minimum of $2,500 for a session on that, and you only have to buy 50 bucks to spend time with me on that with your business. Or if you wanted my Money Map to Freedom program, let's say you say, hey, you know, I don't really want private time with you. I'd rather have your Money Map to Freedom program or my Lift Foundation System. Both of these programs sell for $1,997 regularly, so you'd be getting either one of them at half the investment just by buying 50 of Michael's books. I don't make a penny on this. It's absolutely a gift because I love what Michael is up to in the world, and I want you to benefit from it. So, again, it's only for three of you, which means go ahead and do it as quickly as possible and get the information to Michael. Or if you're going to do it, maybe what you should do is, Michael, where could people let you know that they're going to do it right away
email privatelist@ellsberg.com, ellsberg.com, privatelist@ellsberg.com. Either email, say you're going to do that, or just send the receipt showing that you have done it, you know, purchased from a major online retailer. And we're going to, right now, we're on the 21st, because this is going to be replayed a lot. We're going to keep this offer open until next Tuesday, the 27th. Of September till at 12 noon Pacific time. So you got a couple of days to think about it, but those three sessions, and thank you so much, Alexis,
You're welcome.
Just blown away. I didn't even know that you were going to offer three.
No, you didn't.
Thank you. And those are going to go quick. Neither of our time is really available for sale, so this is kind of the only way you can get it, and that is the way to do it.
So that's how you do it. And if you do want some time with us right now, you can ask your questions by pressing *2 or by entering them into the webcast form. If you're on the webcast, there should be a place for you to enter in
questions. Let's take a live call. We have someone from Tucson, Arizona with a call, a number starting 520-797. That's the beginning of the phone. So, Tucson, Arizona, you are live on the air. Hello, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you?
Hi there. What's your name?
My name is Patrick.
Hey, Patrick.
Hi, Patrick.
I'm totally with you on everything that both of you have said, and honored to be on the call, honored to have you.
Thank you so much.
Answering my question. Let me tell you my situation
real
briefly. I'm an old guy with kids ranging in age from 33 to 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I've tried to raise my children in as best the kind of mindset that you've been talking about, advocating, as I could, although I've labored my whole life with the scarcity mindset sort of thing. And it's still very difficult for me to not come out of that mindset. But I have a son who graduated from a top 50 law school. He's got a job in a prestigious law firm, and he's basically miserable and selling his soul for 16 hours a day and a lot of cash.
But I was there.
I don't believe he's too happy. But my and I don't believe he'll always stay there either. But my six-year-old is the focus of my life, and she's in a school that emphasizes. I mean, there's some room for, the other kind of mindset, but still a school that emphasizes the standardized testing and this, that, and the other thing. And she is not personality-wise that way at all. She's a very smart, very bright kid. But I can already tell that she's getting squashed into a kind of a conformist mindset that's going to kill her soul. And so I ask the question on her behalf, but I'd be a liar to not say it's also on my own behalf, because I'm in my mid-50s and I'm still growing up. I'm still trying to find my path. I have passions, and I have skills, and I have knowledge. I've not yet learned how exactly to focus them in, you know, material programs, books that might help people, which is what I want to do, because I have been about, I spent 30 years as a hospice chaplain, to give you a sense of my service of humanity, of people who were 6 months or less to live, and their families who were grieving with their loved one. What can I do to balance my child's life in a way that high achieving, high academically performing? She's a first grader. With, what's happening in terms of performance skills in the typical educational way, and what she needs to be free. Because I think fundamentally, when you're talking about money or time or whatever, to me, underlying that whole thing is the word freedom.
Alexis, you're the parent on the line here, so why don't you take a first step at answering that? Yeah.
Great. Well, the first thing that I want to say is actually for your son, the lawyer, because I was exactly where he was. And the advice that Michael shared of taking 2 years to invest in the success skills so that he can transition into his own satisfying practice, please give him that advice. Please give him this book. Please have him listen to this call. Please tell him to come to my Law Business Revolution website and receive the free gifts that I have there so that he can begin to make the transition into his own practice, because he's wasting his life at that big law firm, and it only gets more entrenched each year he stays there. And so those are some things that you can offer to him so that he can begin to make that transition. It's not too late for him, just like it's not too late for you. And it's certainly not too late, of course, for the six-year-old. I'll be honest. This is a big struggle that we're having in my own family right now, because what I would like is to be homeschooling my child or my children, both of them, and my ex-husband is completely against it. And not to mention, I'm really not cut out personally to homeschool based on my own temperament being and my kids' temperament. But I wonder whether that or some form of it or some form of alternative schooling is possible for your child at this stage.
Maybe. Part of my dilemma is that I have a lot to give her, a lot to teach her. She has a lot to teach me, too. She's got a wonderful, kind, compassionate soul. But I don't believe I have the temperament to be a, quote, homeschooler. But there aren't too many alternatives.
There's actually a huge amount of alternatives. One of the things that I would encourage you, where do you live? Oh, you're in Arizona.
Uh-huh.
One of the things that I would encourage you to look at is some books written by John Holt, H-O-L-T. specifically about a model called unschooling, which is pretty amazing. And I actually have some friends who are unschoolers. And, wow, these kids are absolutely amazing children. And I wish that I had been unconditioned enough or deconditioned enough to be willing to use this process with my kids of unschooling. And so I encourage you to take a look at that. And then for you, with 30 years in working in hospice, what are you doing now?
Well, I'm doing a couple things. I've started my own little business that's a wedding industry business.
Great.
I also do some kind of holiday things. Well, I'll just say I'm a professional Santa Claus.
That's great. So I would say the first step is for you to get out of the scarcity mindset, and that may not have happened yet. If it has, then you've got some freedom, and Michael can share with you some ways that perhaps you can channel that those 30 years in hospice into a creative project, into a book, into really helping other people with what you must have learned sitting at the bedsides of, you know, hundreds, I'm sure, of people in the last 6 months of their lives.
Yeah,
and
I'm going to be flat honest with you too. I'd like to believe about myself that I've left the scarcity mindset and am on to a different way of being. I'm not sure at all that I have, because I keep going back to it. It's like, you know, being on a great healthy diet or whatever, and then having something, a great chocolate chip cookie, tempt you. It seems like our whole culture tempts you to be back and I don't know if I'm strong-willed enough to resist. I mean, the mindset is pounding in terms of that whole scarcity thing.
Well, I think there's a lot of, you know, if you go in a lot of the self-help development literature, there's so much of a focus on mindset. And, you know, everyone's read Think and Grow Rich, and it's like all in The Secret, and it's all about mindset. And I do think mindset is incredibly important. I have an entire chapter devoted to it. I think, though, that there is, here's a point I don't get seen made a lot, and I think it's very important, that there has to be a relationship between mindset and real-world chops. And there has to be a dance between them. So take an example. I'm not a runner. I get in shape through dancing, and I'm pretty good shape that way. I'm a really serious dancer, but I hate running, and I'm not good at it, and I just can't run very far. And so let's say I got the idea I want to run a marathon. I could have all the mindset in the world about I'm a great marathon runner, and I'm going to do it, and I'm great. If I don't train, and then I go try to run a marathon, I'm going to be flat on my ass by like mile three. So the mindset is relevant to getting me to go train, but there has to be those real world chops of the training.
You're talking about what makes some of the whole message of The Secret ridiculous if there's not just, I mean, you
right.
don't just sit around and navel gaze and
exactly.
hope that somehow the cloud opens up for you.
Right. Now, on the question of your daughter, and just preface this, I'm not a parent, and, you know, I did go to college, so in some ways I'm not the most credible person to say what I'm about to say, but I have been researching and talking to a lot of people about this, so that's where my perspective comes from. Play with the idea that it's not all that important if your daughter goes to college, and if so, if she does go, how elite that college is. Just play with that idea and see how that changes your relation to the things she's doing now. Because that's kind of the end point that most parents start with, is they've got to get into Harvard, they've got to get into Princeton, Stanford, Yale, Brown. I went to Brown myself. And if that is your assumption, that determines a lot about how the preceding 16 years are going to look. So the high leverage point here is to start playing with scenarios that either don't involve college or that don't involve going to the most elite college out there. And if that's your end point, then there's a lot more room for, even if she's still in a pretty regular school, you know, you don't have to be riding her to get the best grades, you know, and this could
right.
be like total blasphemy for me to say, you know, that you shouldn't have your kids be getting the best grades, because like our national religion for children is grades. Like, that's
but
what
grade,
we care
yeah.
about with kids is grades, period. So I'm sort of being blasphemous here, but I mean, really, there's quite a bit of evidence around this that grades, which is like the focus of children's lives, you know, from like 6 till 22, actually don't have a very high correlation with life success. Once you get past like B level, I mean, if someone's getting like F's and D's, you know, that's a problem. They're not going to probably, with that level of academic intelligence, they're not going to succeed in life. But once you're kind of at the B plus level of grades, the kind of real world street smart skills that we've been talking about in the last 90 minutes are far, 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 far more relevant to your child's success in the rest of her life than going from a B to an A. So,
right.
And I'd love to give you an example of that, if I could. I'm sorry
yeah,
to interrupt,
sure.
Michael. I just
I'd
want to give
that.
A very specific example. My partner, his daughter is in a regular school, and yet on the weekends he takes her to a farmer's market to play music, and people pay her. They just
yeah.
drop money in her little guitar box. And she's made anywhere, I think, from like $45 all the way to $135 in an hour.
Yeah.
What that has imprinted into her is that she never has to worry about making money.
Yeah.
She knows how to make money. He is teaching her every day with various things that he does. There's other things, too. At one point, he was paying her, I think this was before she was eight or nine and she could write, he was paying her $1 a note card to write out quotes from success books. For example, she could be writing out quotes from The Education of Millionaires or
yeah.
Or the, you know, Think and Grow Rich,
yeah.
and he would pay her $1
a
note card.
And let's say that weekend she spends doing that at the farmer's market and she's not doing her homework and studying for tests. Let's say that means
mm-hmm.
she gets a B in her grades instead of an A.
Mm-hmm.
I would
mm-hmm.
say that is a very good bargain, because the real-world skills she's learning from that farmer's market stuff are just going to set her for so much more success than her peers who didn't learn those skills.
Yeah.
And it is
yeah.
just a thought that occurred to me is, like, we've all heard about, like, the 80-20 principle and how, like, 80% of your results come from 20% of your effort. So let's
right.
apply that to education and grades. I mean, I don't have data around this, but my general sense is that, like, 80% of the kind of career success, credential type value you get out of formal education will come from getting B's, and that's 20% of the effort. It's just not that hard to get B's in today's academic environment. You pretty much have to try to get less than a B. So if you just
yeah.
are basically getting B's, that's going to give you 80% of the kind of credential, professional value of your education, and the other 80% of effort goes from getting from B to A, which gives you only 20% of the additional professional results. If you instead spent those hours and hours and hours trying to get A's, if you instead spent them, you know, going out and doing cool things in the world, starting a business, you know, learning about sales, like getting some sales experience, you know, volunteering, that kind of stuff, I think the overall result of success will be much higher than someone who just, you know, focused on straight A's all their life. Let's take some other questions. Thank you so much,
Thank
Patrick.
You both.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
fantastic. I'll be
Thank
buying
you.
The book.
Great.
Excellent.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So we've got a bunch of people still on the line. Let's take some more questions here. Is there
Great.
Anyone else out there? You can raise your hand with *2. If you want to ask a question. And we've got a few people who have submitted online. So while you're raising your hand, *2, I'm going to take a question that was submitted online. We have here from Eric, who submitted this online, and he asks, I have begun my re-education since, quote, graduating college last year. What do you advise the 24-year-old debt-laden kid? Great question. This is sort of a national zeitgeist right now. Like, education didn't used to be that expensive. It was an investment of time, but in the 70s, in the 60s and 70s, it was not actually that much of an investment of money. It was a pretty reasonable investment. And for a bunch of very complicated reasons, including just pure greed, and that's not it, that's not the only reason, but it's one of them, college tuition has skyrocketed tenfold, far, far, far faster than the rate of inflation. In fact, far faster than the rate of healthcare costs, which is pretty frightening because we all know how high healthcare costs are. So it's become a very expensive proposition to get a BA degree or a master's or a graduate degree. And so we have this rash now of kids who followed all the advice their parents gave them that was based on the 60s and 70s, like, hey, go to college. It's a great investment. It's going to get you ahead in life, and you should do it. They've followed that advice, taken from a context when college was like $200 a semester, and ported it into a context when college is $50,000 a year, and we're getting train wrecks based on that. So that's a great question. And the answer is that, and you focus this on your question there, Eric, is re-education. So you've now gotten your academic education. You've gone through that system. There is value from having gotten that. There's no question that there is value from having that background. But now it's time to realize that you've been through a system that didn't tell you, they didn't let you in on a little secret that you're now discovering. And that secret is that the academic education was not the whole picture. It's part of the picture. Like, we all need to get to that kind of B level, I think, to have success. Although there are some examples in my book of people who weren't even there and were successful. But, you want a normal amount of academic intelligence for your success. But you weren't let in on the secret that actually that's only part of the equation. And there's this whole other area of education in street smarts that you're going to have to get. And so to really, you may be upset about it, it might be shocking, but to just come to terms with the fact that now that your education has really just begun, and now it's time to continue the education, not in more academics. Please, please, please don't go into debt to get another degree. Start learning the education you weren't told about from your parents and teachers, the street smart, real world education.
I'd like to give a little bit of advice to folks who have not yet gone to college, or maybe you're in the middle of college and are realizing, oh, my God, I'm wasting my time.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to your parents. Put together a curriculum for yourself and say, hey, Mom and Dad, listen, if you're going to pay for me to go to college anyway, here's a 2-year, 3-year curriculum that I would love to engage in.
Mm-hmm.
Of courses, workshops, seminars, retreats, trainings, mm-hmm. mentors, coaches. And Michael talks a lot in his book about how to connect with the right mentors
mm-hmm.
and teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And you can apply that and then go to your parents and say, here's what I would like to do. Rather than you paying for me to go to college, please pay for me to do this so I can graduate with something that will be of tremendous value to me in the future.
Yes. Absolutely. And that's an entrepreneurial skill. It's making an offer. It's saying, okay, your offer, folks, is Mom and Dad, is that I, spend 6 hours a day, studying, French lessons and studying for my SAT and going to school and going to college. That's an offer. And I'd like to make you a counter offer.
Yeah.
Here's how I propose to educate myself. They may not take the offer, but you're learning negotiation. And at a certain point, I mean, we're talking about college here. At a certain point, I don't know what the right age is for each person, and it depends, but at a certain point, you become an adult. I don't know whether it's 18 or 19 or 20 or, some people, it's not even until their 40s. But, at a certain point, you just have to stop caring about your parents' opinion of how you should succeed. Everyone has to reach that point. And it's not to bash parents. It's that parents, in their infinite love for their children, tend to advocate very safe, kind of predictable paths for their kids. And I'm not bashing that. It comes purely out of love and not wanting the kids to fail in life and not wanting them to be hungry. So it's very well-intentioned. But those intentions can be harmful when they are limiting your vision of who you want to be, because you are not just living into your parents' vision of you. And if you do live that way, I don't think you're going to be happy. So at a certain point, you just, I don't know what the right age is for you specifically on this call, but if you're, you know, young and going through your education, at a certain point, a really important step is to just stop listening to your parents' vision for you, because you have, and Alexis, yeah, you might be nervous about this because you're a parent, but
no,
you know,
I'm 93.
We all went through this, you know, we all went through it.
Yeah.
So,
You got to do it. You have to grow up. You have to grow up, and the sooner you grow up, the more happy you're going to be in your life, and really being your own person separate from your parents is the beginning part. One other thing that I wanted to offer to the guy graduating with all of the debt is don't let shame or fear or guilt about that debt hold you back from getting the education that you actually need. It's a sunk cost. It had some purpose. We don't know the purpose of it yet, perhaps. Get yourself on a long-term repayment plan with that debt.